Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, hi, and welcome to another episode of The Emma Gunn Show. I am your host, Emma Gunnar Wardner, and joining me in this episode, I'm very pleased to say that it is Rochelle Humes. Now, Rochelle is actually someone I've been wanting to speak to on this podcast for a while, not least because her career trajectory from child star to national TV treasure via one of the UK's best-selling girl groups is something that doesn't happen by accident. And I, of course, wanted to unpick how she has navigated such an impressive working life. As is always the case, I am 100% transparent with you, my most excellent listeners. So although this is not a sponsored episode, no money has changed hands, and I'm not receiving any kind of kickback or benefit, financial or otherwise, from doing this show, I was able to get time with Rochelle through her ambassadorship with the haircare brand John Frieda, for whom she is the Dream Curls ambassador. So this time in Rochelle's schedule, which is very busy considering on the day when I chatted with her, she was fresh from live TV when we recorded, was facilitated by the brand, and we do touch on her role within the brand in this episode, but in a much wider, bigger conversation. And here's what I find so very interesting about Rochelle. She found fame first time around in S Club Juniors, a lovely pop, I don't know what seven of them is, a lovely pop band, although she was no stranger to TV and performing arts before then. From there, she reappeared on the pop scene in The Saturdays, a five-piece all-girl band who stormed the charts with pop anthems from 2007 to 2014. The band went on hiatus, and so Rochelle's TV career really started to take off. She and husband Marvin from the band JLS were stand-in hosts for popular daytime magazine show in the UK This Morning. Then came a Christmas special for Strictly Come Dancing, the UK's equivalent to Dancing with the Stars, Children in Need, Ninja Warrior UK, The Hit List, and more and more. But all the while, Rochelle has also made wise collaborations, whether that's producing her own fashion line with online fashion boutique Very.co.uk and writing her first book, The Magic Mega Magic Hair Swap, a children's book with a message of self-acceptance and self-love at its heart, that when combined, made me think Rochelle also has quite the entrepreneurial spirit. And if you've been listening to this show for a while, long-time listeners will know that really is the thing that gets me interested in having someone on the show to have a conversation. So in this chat, Rochelle, now 30, and I talk about listening to your gut, learning how to say no, how priorities have changed when she had children. She has two daughters, aged 6 and 2, and why a positive outlook is always the best place to start. I really, really enjoy chatting to Rochelle, and I hope you enjoy listening to what is hopefully her debut, not her last appearance, on The Emma Gunn Show. Well, isn't this lovely?
This is very nice, isn't it?
Rochelle Humes, I'm so glad that you're on the show.
Oh, no, thanks for having me. Pleased to be here.
Good. That's pleasing to hear. You are... I've met you before, like many, many moons ago when I worked on magazines. But I have always thought of you as somebody who is... And I was saying to the girls earlier who are in the room, I've already referenced them... You are a real go-getter, but you're a very, very positive person.
Yeah, I think I'm definitely glass half full always. Mm-hmm. Annoyingly so, I think, sometimes. But that's just always been my outlook. I'm definitely a go-getter. I just believe there's, like, especially now in 2019, I just believe there's no ceiling. And I just think that, you know, there's you're not limited, you shouldn't be pigeonholed now. And I think it's happening less and less. You can just go after what you want.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm all for that. I'm all for a hustler. You know, that's kind of, yeah, that's my attitude.
I love the hustle. So going back, you've been working from a very, very young age. Mm. How did you know what you want?
I mean, it's funny, isn't it? You say working, like some things I really, I guess technically I am working. But particularly when I was young, I didn't see it as work. Mm. I was just kind of living out every little girl's dream. So yeah, it really didn't feel like a job at all. And I definitely know that because then when I sort of relived the same sort of industry as an adult, we were very sheltered and very well looked after. And we were given a lunch break. At this time, it had to be this many hours. And, you know, we literally had a ball. And yeah, being in the same field as an adult is very different.
Like, oh.
Yeah, like, oh, okay. Well, all right. We don't get to sit down for a lunch break for this long. And, you know, yes, I definitely learned that we were very well looked after. But yeah, it's crazy. I've been in the industry for a very long time.
Mm.
I got in Escobar Juniors when I was 12. And before that, I was doing West End musicals before that. So I think, yeah, just quite some time. It's about 10 years old.
Did you always know? You might hear some clanking in the background, listeners. There's something going on.
Apologies.
But we're going to crack on. did you always know that you wanted to take it beyond just like doing theatre or music at school?
Yeah, like, always. I always knew I had like a hunger for it. And I was never sort of comfortable in just being like, oh, okay. You know, because I there was a lot of friends that from my actual school that we went to the same sort of performing arts sort of club at the weekend. And I could tell when they'd start to sort of grow out of it and then they were more interested in just hanging out with friends or, you know, rather it sort of stopping it being a hobby at school.
Mm.
But I was never over it. And I kind of knew that because my friends along the way had sort of like everyone was dropping like flies and I was like still desperate to be involved. So I kind of knew I was never going to tire of it.
That's really interesting because I think at that age, it would be very easy to kind of go along with the crowd and go, well, yeah. Everyone's doing that, so I'll do that too. But you've obviously got a very strong...
Yeah, I've always been strong-willed in that. And I think I used to make my mum pretend I was grounded so that I couldn't meet my friends because I wanted to, you know, do extra hours at my performing arts club. So, which is funny. I'd be like, oh, I've got a birthday party on that day, but I don't really want to go. Mum, can you say that I'm grounded? You know, so my mum's like, you're always grounded. People are going to wonder what's wrong with you.
What were your crimes? Did you ever say what you were grounded for?
No, I was just like, oh, me and my mum had an argument and she's not letting me go out. Because in the end, it started becoming embarrassing because I was just putting that before anything else.
Mm.
Which is, you shouldn't be embarrassed about. That was my choice. But it just... when you're young, it's just less awkward, isn't it, to have those sort of conversations, I suppose.
Mm. When you get into it, you're in a pop band from the age of 12. And yet there's all, maybe when you're slightly older, there's lots of other opportunities that are available to you. And what I think always impressed me about you was that you were seeing them. You weren't just tunnel vision.
Yeah.
Are you very much somebody who gets into a situation that some might see as like a goal destination?
Yeah. I think you can also have more than one passion. I don't feel like, you know, that when I used to go to performing arts school, you would sort of study dance, acting, singing, you know, media. Like it wasn't just, you know, you have to be a singer and then that's all you can do for the rest. And I think sometimes this industry, I think we're growing out of it now, but I definitely think... yeah, I think sometimes you can pigeonhole you and then you're sort of not allowed to then move on to a different, you know, move into something else. I think that's quite silly, really, because I think that's just not... when you're in the industry, it's so broad and it's so varied. It's just amazing to enjoy all of that. And I think my passion has always been performing, be it on television, be it on, you know, on stage. But telly has always been a big passion of mine, as well as singing. So I think... I always knew I wanted to explore both avenues. And before the Saturdays, I went on to do kids telly. So I used to host kids television for CBBC every weekend.
Is that Smile?
Smile, yeah. Fern Cotton done it, Reggie Yates, myself, and then a guy called Barney Harwood, who is still very much a big player in the kids' world. So I think that was always my passion. So I always knew I wanted to go back to telly at one point because I just love the buzz.
Mm.
I love live television. I love just being in the moment. I kind of love the danger of anything could go wrong. I kind of just, it's weird. It's like a really good adrenaline rush. So I knew I wanted to go back to that. For me, it was just a case of when. And then when we sort of called time on the Saturdays, there was no like even desire for me to record a solo album or a solo record. I didn't do it. And I think everyone was like, oh, so you're going to put music out? And I'm like, no, I want to go into telly.
Were there offers, I would imagine, at that point?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think not... I think maybe I'd done that for so long and it just, I just didn't want to do that anymore. I sort of parked it there with the girls and that was that. And I wanted to do something that was really me.
Mm.
And telly's always been that. So, yeah.
Did it keep also, I guess, maybe it kept the Saturdays in your mind a little bit sacred?
I suppose so. Yeah, maybe. I just think I was kind of happy with the success that we'd had and what all that we'd achieved. And the thought of doing it on my own when I wasn't really at that point, I was kind of, you know, we'd put pause on that and I was kind of happy that we had.
Mm.
We all were, hence why we did it. So yeah, I wasn't longing to go back and do that same thing and do the sort of same circuit by myself. Mm. I was just really excited about sort of a fresh endeavor and something new.
Yeah. It's it speaks of paying attention and actually trusting yourself. So I'm curious, and I ask a lot of my guests this, but is there somebody who instilled that sense of self in you, like a role model or a mentor who taught you to trust what you think?
I mean, I suppose my mum, in the sense of like, you know, she raised us on her own and she's always very much been like, you know, you only live once, you go out there and get what you want. And she's always been like that. And she's also been the kind of, you know, she's never... which I really admire, actually, that she's... My mum's single now and she's dating, which kind of freaks me out because she tells me everything. But she's never been... Like, when we were younger, you know, she could have stayed with my dad. You know, she wouldn't have been happy, but she could have done for the sake of us.
Mm.
But she kind of taught me what respect was at a really young age because she was like, I'm not happy in this situation. She was very open and very frank about it. And she's always been that way. If she doesn't feel right in a situation, you know... life's too short to be stuck in a situation that you don't want to be in. And she was very much like, you know, I'm still going to be a good mum and raise my kids, but I don't define being a good mum staying with, you know, the other parent if it doesn't make you happy, because I think that reflects on your children. So I was always kind of brought up that way. So I think maybe that, in a sense of like knowing what's right for you, she always knew what was right for her.
And also, I guess, not doing what other people would expect you to do, or like what you should do.
Exactly that.
Do you have this is a funny word, should. I've come to see it as a really toxic word.
Yeah, I suppose it is, really. And I think everyone is so, obviously everyone's individual and every story is different, and I'm really just not down for sort of going with what you, like you say, what you should be doing, because really what should anyone be doing? And that's the beauty of where we are in the world now. Like there's so much change and you can be who you want.
Mm.
You can be gender neutral and be at school. Like that's okay now. That happens.
Mm.
So I think it's only a positive.
It is only a positive.
Yeah.
You have what I would describe as quite an entrepreneurial spirit. Because when you go through what you do, fashion, beauty... you have a beauty range. Like,
yeah, I know. It's crazy, isn't it?
You seem to do the things that a lot of people talk about.
That's always been me. Like, I don't just talk about it like I want to do it. Like, I'm not one of those people that are like, I wish I would have done that a couple of years ago when I was talking about it for so long. Because now someone else might have done it. Or, you know, I'm always sort of on the, okay, that's just always my buzz. That's my drive. Like, I'm... have my fingers in lots of different pies, but I just find it, that's sort of what sort of gets me going. I love that. I love the creativity behind it. And I just think, yeah, I just, like I said, I just think you have more than one passion and it's okay to kind of be passionate about lots of different things.
Is it learning as well? Do you like constantly testing yourself and learning new things?
Yeah, always. And I think life is that. And I think you just have to, it's just important to keep your brain active. When you're comfortable in one thing and you know exactly what you're doing and you know exactly, I think it's just always good to just be kept on your toes.
What's the thing that's kept you on your toes the most, do you think?
Oh, it's a very good question. I think life generally keeps me on my toes. I think I've got two kids, which I'm constantly like learning as a parent, just daily. It's just, you know, a daily lesson. So I would say having two children and just being aware of the different ages and, you know, they live two completely different lives. Obviously, I've got a 2-year-old and a 6-year-old.
Mm.
And just, you know, they're both so different. So everything I thought I learned about being a mum the first time round, I know nothing with my other child because they're just so different. So it's like parenting all over again. But I love that.
Mm.
I absolutely adore that.
It's unpredictable as well. So
yeah,
with the amount that you do,
uh-huh.
I imagine that there must be quite a bit of planning in place.
Yeah, I mean, I have a really good crew of people around me that kind of, you know, it's not just me at all. And a lot of the time they're chasing me for, you know, can you do this date? Or can I, like, yeah, sorry, I just didn't articulate that yet because I was, you know, at sports day and something else was going on. Then I forgot, then it was bath time and then I was back at work the next day. So I think there's a lot of, like, I'm quite an organised person generally in life. But yeah, I can't take credit for that. Logistically, my diary is a nightmare.
Mm.
But I just go, okay, this is what I want to prioritise for the next 6 months. So this comes to the forefront. Obviously, my kids and my husband are way above any of that. So if anything happens at any point, or if, you know, like a few weeks ago, sports day got rained off on the date it was supposed to be and I'd kept it off work and they moved it again to a couple of days ago. And I'm like, well, we're going to have to rejig that whole day because I'm not missing it.
Mm-hmm.
My kids are my number one and that is the way it will always be. But yeah, apart from that, logistically, it is a nightmare. And I know that I just kind of... Just I look every Sunday, me and my husband, we sit down and we go, this is the next week. And I think that's the only way to do it. Like, we know obviously roughly what's going on in our diaries, but we just, that's the way we mentally process it, right? Mm-hmm. We go, so on a Sunday, so we go, right, you're here, I'm here. Okay, so you're working on this day, I'm not. Brilliant. Okay, we'll swap. And, you know, if there's anything that can be swapped and it needs swapping, we'll always do that.
And then I guess it's the rolling with the punches when something does come up. And, it seems like your reflex, instead of going, oh, is to go, all right, we'll just run with it.
Yeah, oh, totally. I'm just like, do you know what? We're very lucky. This is a first world problem that we're having. You know, it's fine. We can make this work. I mean, listen, inside, a lot of the time I'm like, you know, terrified. Of God. And I, at the end of the day, I'm like, we'll message my husband. I'm like, can you believe we pulled this day off? Not sure how it happened, but we did it. So yeah, that's kind of like my little like yes. And I think, you know, anything's possible. It's just what you want to make happen. And
yeah.
I think that's it. And I think people are like, oh, how do you have time to see each other? I'm like, because that's our priority. Like, if you want to see someone, you'll see them, and then everything else will fall behind. But it's just about prioritizing. And I've realized that more than ever, especially now, like sort of hitting 30, was a bit of a defining moment, and I'm not scared to say no to anything. Like, if I don't want to do it, I'm like, no, it's not for me. Like, lovely, thank you so much. And I don't see no as a negative, where I used to feel like if I used to say no, not just work-wise, generally in life, that people would think badly of me or, oh, I don't want to do that. Oh, God, I'm so embarrassed. I don't want to. Well, it's actually fine. If anyone ever said to me, oh, no, I can't quite do that, or no, that's not really for me, I would never take it personally. Mm-hmm. So it's just knowing that, the way that I take it is probably the way everyone else is going to take it too. If I say it's okay to say I've just pushed myself a bit much that week, I'm going to have a quiet one.
It can be, particularly in your 20s, I don't know about you, but it felt like say yes to everything. Say yes to every opportunity because you never know.
Because you're kind of taught that, aren't you? You sort of go, you know, take it with, you know, your arms wide open and just see exactly, you know, why not? You're here to live, and now in the 20s is a time where you should be grabbing things with both hands and... enjoying yourselves. I think that's programmed into everyone that one day you're going to be old and you're not going to get those opportunities, so enjoy it. But yeah, I think now I'm just okay with myself, and I think a lot of that has to do with being a parent and being in control of that and saying, oh no, it's not for me. And also not being swayed by people. Oh no, but I really think you should do this because of X, Y, and Z. Knowing that actually, yeah, no, I hear what you're saying, I take it on board, but it's still not for me. And being okay with that.
I think that's been a theme that's come up on this show quite a lot, is trusting your inner voice, so that when somebody does say, I do think you should have a look at it. Like, I was house hunting recently, for example. And I said to the estate agent, I really don't want to go and see that. It's not in an area I want to look at, blah, blah, blah. And they sent me this long email. I really think you need to see it because you just don't know. And I went and it was exactly as I expected.
Yeah.
I was like, why didn't I trust
myself? Why didn't you trust yourself? I know, it's silly because sometimes you do want to have that sort of, maybe I am wrong. You know, maybe I should, maybe, you know. So I'll always hear it out. But if I've heard it out and I'm still sort of, you know yourself, in my gut thinking, well, I still don't really want to do it, I won't.
Do you believe in listening to your gut?
Definitely.
Has that always been where your ultimate decision-making has been formulated?
Yeah, I think so. I think you just always, you know what's right for you, essentially. And I think you can think that you don't because of, you know, other influences and other people and other voices around you. But you do it when it comes to raising your kids, when it comes to work, when it comes to relationships, when it, you know, whatever it might be. You know what you want to do at the end of the day, and you know what you should be doing. It's just whether you listen to yourself or not. I think it just depends what character you are, whether you can be talked around, and, you know, which I have been at some points in my life, but I've just grown out of that, which I'm really happy about.
Since you have learned to say no, have you ever said no and seen something that you might previously have said yes to and thought, oh, I'm so glad I didn't, I'm so glad that has validated.
A lot of the time, I think, yeah, like, oh, I can't, I was thinking of an example off my head, but yeah, a lot of the time, you know, when you hear sort of things and you, like, you take other people's opinions on board and you're like, oh, maybe they're right, and then you have that sort of day or two, you're like, oh, I've said no now, that's it. And then you might have seen, now I'm talking with a work head on, but then I might have seen someone else front whatever it is that they were saying that I should do. And I'm like, oh God, thank God I didn't do that. That's so not me. But it's not, you know, so that's where you know just to trust yourself.
Have you ever, I'm assuming that you're on social media a lot. I'm on social media a lot.
The whole world is on social media.
I mean, Instagram.
That's how I know my friends' birthdays now, which is terrible. I'm like, oh, happy birthday. Someone else posts going, happy birthday. I'm like, oh yeah, good. Quickly text them, happy birthday, babe.
I was saying the same thing this weekend about I would not know people's birthdays anymore.
I don't. I think it's just like so old school, isn't it? Sending a card and knowing exactly when it's someone's birthday. Yeah, unfortunately not. I have to wait to see. And if they're not on Instagram, then I probably won't have wished you a happy birthday. Nothing in it. Just I didn't see it.
But one thing that that social media can do is it can throw up comparison. And do you think social media is a positive place, or do you sometimes get caught in that comparison trap?
I think, for example, today I just come from hosting This Morning with Philip. We hosted it today, and there was a lady that was on that we interviewed that was lovely. She has cancer, and she got told 12 years ago that she wouldn't make her 40th. She's now not, so I think she's 52. So she's kind of like outlived what they said she was going to live. She went into remission for a few years. She is now like having palliative care. So she's terminal and she knows that. And kind of every day we're treating a special. She was so, so lovely. And she basically left a comment on This Morning's Facebook page, I think. And I think This Morning posted a post about the royal family and whether they should post pictures of the christening or something. And she then posted underneath saying, you know, I absolutely love the royals, but this is my, you know, and just was just chatting away, you know, I feel like I've had cancer for this many years, obviously then can't work, et cetera, which means that, I mean, bless her, she had a terrible story. She ended up losing her son last year and she hasn't been able to afford the headstone of the grave and she was basically saying, I've been in this situation and I've paid tax for my whole life. I've been to university, I've studied, I was a teacher, and at the minute, you know, they won't show pictures of their family as much as I love the royals, and we're also paying for their house to be renovated when I can't afford my house anymore, and I couldn't afford that for my son. And it was just a really, like, and it wasn't a sort of angry message, it was just a message to say, you know, like, I just can't believe that we're in a world where two people can live such different lives, and I did pay into the system and now I'm not reaping anything. And she basically went viral because of this message, and it would, like, just sort of got picked up. Anyway, we interviewed her today on the show, and then because of that message that someone had tagged This Morning in that she'd put, we then got in touch with her. And then today, her other daughter and grandchildren live in Texas, and This Morning did so well. They arranged for them to surprise her live in the studio. But, you know, so what my point is, out of something for her, which is really grim, social media, if used in the right way, you can connect people and you can... And today, then, live on This Morning, we raised way more. She had a Just Giving page for this, and she was way over double what she'd asked for the gravestone by the end of her being there. And, you know, so if it's used in a positive way, it can really be... It's an amazing tool. It's an amazing tool for businesses that are starting out. And but then I think... Like anything in life, when it's in the hands of the wrong person, or not even the wrong person, because we've all got the ability to be nice, but used in such a negative way, then it's obviously not a good thing. It's not a good thing when I think that kids or, you know, teens are seeing it and thinking that there should be like a girl that has doctored the hell out of her picture. And so I think there's really swings and roundabouts for me. But I think that with anything in life, like, you can make great things happen if you want to, but there'll always be those negative people. And I think it just sums up the world in general.
I've had, you're reminding me a little bit of what Jen Sincero, the author, said when she came on the show, when she's like, this is a choice. You have a choice to get up and be positive.
Yeah, totally that. And I think, you know, what's crazy is anyone can sit behind a phone or a keyboard and type what they want, but really, would they have, you know, if you can say it to my face, then I welcome that. But if you can't, and you would literally shout from across the street and run away, then that just shows the sort of person that you are, you know. But listen, social media, I'm so lucky and I have a really lovely following and a nice sort of group of people on mine, and I think it's what you make it. I think you follow who you want to follow people that are going to make you feel positive and not negative, and so you do have a choice in all of that.
Yeah, it's true. I want to come back to what you said about 6 months and goals and priorities.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm putting the word goals in there. I'm wondering if you do set goals, if you sit down and say, whether it's on December the 31st or at any point, you say, do you know what? I feel like I'm building up some momentum with work. So for the next 6 months, I'm going to see if we can make X, Y, and Z happen. Do you do it like that?
Yes and no. Like, I don't ever really have, I suppose everybody has goals as such, but I don't like really like sort of write down a formula as such and go, this is the bucket list, this is what I want to happen. But I do kind of go, okay, this is my passion. I'd like to focus on this year or whatever that might be. But then sometimes it is a case of just riding a wave. And if you're having a good period, you know, this that I wanted to do might work now, or and just sort of judging it. But I think that's just life. I think, but yeah, every New Year's Day, we normally go away for New Year, because it's the only time that we can sort of guarantee that we're going to get a holiday together as a family. As in, like, mine and Marv's industry goes really quiet. And the summer, if we get a kid's holiday, is very like last minute. And New Year's Day, I always sit down and I watch The Secret. Obviously, I've read it loads of times, but I watch the visual one. And I just give myself a little boost of like going into the new year. And yeah, I do that every New Year's Day.
What do you get out of The Secret? It might be really personal, but what for you adds such value that it means that you revisit it time and time again?
I just think if you put anything out there to the universe, it will come back to you. In the sense of, like, I think negative breeds, negative energy just breeds for more and more negative energy, which is obviously not anything, like, health-related. Obviously, that's just, you've sadly got no control over health to some degree, you know. But, yeah, I think the company you keep as well, I think, is got such a big thing to do with that. Yeah, I think I'm not sure really what I take from it, but I always sort of feel really like re-energized by watching it. And I just think if you just visualize what you want, you will get that. If you just keep sort of on at that and sort of working away to it, I think, because you've only then got one sort of direction that you can go, and that's to get what you're after.
Is it because, and this is for anyone who maybe doesn't know The Secret or has heard about it and isn't quite sure how to apply it, but it's different from wishing, isn't it? It's almost like you put a structure behind your wishes.
Yeah, it's almost like little things, like just mentally sort of visualising stuff. So they call them like vision boards. I mean, it all sounds a little bit airy-fairy. It's actually not. It's really simple. Like writing a list of what it is you actually want, looking at that list as often as you can, and don't just write it and then that's something that you did on New Year's Day and forget about it. Like keep sort of coming back to that. And, you know, slowly it starts to happen and it all starts to pan out. Little things they say on there, like printing off a picture of your dream house and sticking it on your fridge. And, you know, some of the stuff is,
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
A little bit far-fetched, but the premise of it, I think, is just brilliant. It's just to be positive and just sort of think towards that mental goal constantly. And I think the more you, you know, the more you think, they say thoughts are things is what they say. And I really believe that.
Yeah. And curious, I'm curious about whether when you have a goal, it seems like you reach a lot of them.
I mean, like touch wood. I think, do you know what? I work hard. I'm such a grafter and I don't like, I'm not blowing my own trumpet with that, but I just think, and that's what I try and show my children, that it doesn't happen because you go, okay, this is what I want to do. Where is it all? And I'm trying to have to teach that to my younger siblings and stuff, because I think they're sort of a little bit more millennial and they seem to think that this is going to happen and they're going to live this Instagram life tomorrow. And it's not about that. Like, you know, you're going to get knockbacks, but that's all part of the story at the end when you get there. So for me, it's, yeah, a lot of my goals have worked out, but not because I've sort of, you know, rubbed a crystal ball and they've appeared in front of me. It's because I've put the time in. And that's, yeah, that's kind of always what I want to show my kids, that you have to work to reach what you want. Don't rely on someone else to bring that to you. You know, you're your sort of own master, really.
And it's interesting to me because I feel a little bit similar. I definitely would describe myself as a grafter and a hustler, meaning that I work, I put a roof over my head.
Yeah.
No one else is responsible for me. But I would be a bit funny about saying that in certain company.
Yeah,
and
of course.
I think it's funny. I think it's interesting.
It's the British thing. I think you have to be. I remember watching, was it ages ago? I remember Fern Cotton did a documentary and she followed lots of different people's lives. I remember her being away with Craig David somewhere because they're quite good friends.
Was it at his Miami house?
And it was at his Miami house, which was just epic. But she was saying, like, why the move to Miami? Because it just seemed very random in, like, the peak of his career. He just got off and up to move to Miami. And he was saying that just the whole vibe about being stateside to being here is just so different in the where it's, when it comes down to positivity. Like, he remembers he was driving a car that he'd wanted since he was a tiny little boy, and he'd bought this car and he got to a point where in his career where he felt really happy about that. And it was a convertible, I can't remember what car it was, but he had his roof down. And someone said to him as he was driving through London, oh, what a flash, so-and-so and all of this. You can imagine, some choice words. And then he was driving the same car in America and someone was like, hey man, nice car. So he's just like, the difference in, like, we're sort of programmed to have to keep people grounded by sort of bringing them back down to earth. Which is also, on one side is amazing about us, but another side you think, what's he's minding his own business, driving his car that he's worked very hard to have. Where's the negative in that, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's just kind of, it's the British in us.
Yeah, true. And on the way to goals, I'm very curious about this at the moment, because in my own life, I realise that I've been so goal-oriented that I haven't been enjoying the journey.
Yeah.
Have you ever experienced that?
I think that's a big thing. I was actually saying that to Marvin. We were saying that last year. That was one of our New Year's resolutions, of just, like, live in the moment, because you set yourself little milestones, and if you get to one of them, you're too busy thinking about, well, tomorrow I've got this on, because you're working towards the next half of that milestone, rather than going, yes, we achieved this little bit that we didn't think, you know, that at one time that was a wish and a hope.
Yeah.
And rather than just living in the moment a little bit more.
How do you do it?
I don't really know. I'm still, I've not mastered that one yet. But we're trying. Like, the other day, Well, a couple of months ago, we had a brand new show that we first show that we our own show together, and we'd had a really busy week. And he said to me, "What are we going to do the weekend when the show's on? What should we just have a takeaway and our mum and dad can come over?" I was like, "Do you know what? No, this is exactly what we said that we wasn't going to do. You know, when it comes to life." So I was like, "Right, okay, let's get all our friends together." You know, we hired a room somewhere and put it on a big screen, and we just got all our friends and we celebrated. We opened a bottle and we were like, okay, let's celebrate this milestone. So we did. But it's so easy to crawl back into that, like, oh yeah, oh no, it's really good, but I've got to be up so early tomorrow. Because life gets in the way. But I think it's just sort of being, I mean, we're always grateful and we always appreciate everything. But I think it's just sort of saying it out loud a little bit more.
Yeah. I feel like what's come up a lot from listeners as well is there's always a reason not to do something. When I've been getting messages of like, I didn't do that because I was saving money for this, so I didn't enjoy that, or whatever it might be.
Yeah, I think that's everything in life. Like, is right now the right time to have another baby because we might need a bigger car, or there's not enough room in this house? Or if you think like that, you know, life just wouldn't happen. I think you just have to just go with your gut again, and just if you want to do something, go for it.
Yeah, this is true. Well, which brings me on to the book, actually, because I really love the book and I love what the book is about. So it's The Mega Hair Swap. And again, it's sort of, I wouldn't say it's out of left field for you to do it, but equally, it's not like, oh yeah, of course she's going to, when it came out, it was like, of course.
It was just one of those really natural, organic processes. We had never sat around when I'm planning my year and figuring out what we're going to do where. Writing a book wasn't part of that plan. It literally was just a natural thing that I called my agent and I was like, I've been through this whole journey with my little girl and not loving her hair. And long story short is that she loves to read, and she was at that age where she's really getting into it now at school, and particularly when I wrote the book. And there was no, I went to a bookshop, I looked at Amazon, there was no sort of book that I really felt that did what it needed to and say what it needed to say that could sort of encourage her to sort of love herself. So I called my agent, I was like, I'm thinking of writing a kid's book. How hard can it be to write a kid's book? You know, a picture book for a youngster. I need to meet with a good illustrator. I just really want to do this. She was like, all right, okay, I'll set you up. Let me just figure it out and set you up with some meetings. So then a couple of months gone past, we met like a couple of people, went to meet a load of different publishers. Because when they heard, then they were interested that I was doing it. And then I found a publisher that I just loved, and instantly we sort of had a connection because her little girl said the same thing to her.
Right.
And we sort of hit it off. And I was like, okay, cancel all the other meetings from the diary because there's no point. I know I like this woman.
She'll go again.
My gut again. She gets me. She gets what this is about. This is what we're going to do. And then I met. And I literally, they sent me like all these amazing illustrators. And there was this one girl called Rachel Suzanne who had just was at college. Young. She's from Birmingham. And she really got the hair when... And I just sort of had like this real sort of connection with her that I was like, okay, this is the girl. And they were trying to push me to use like, this one's really established. And I'm like, no. Well, if I don't give her a book, when's her first book going to be? You know, she's great. Why not? So that was that. And then that's how that happened. And it's now I've got pressure on the publishing team to write another book. And I was like, well, that's something that I felt super passionate about. So that's why that book. So yeah, that's the only thing that happens is that then they go, okay, we need another one now because it done well. And I didn't expect it to do it, you know, anywhere near as well as it has done. But I think every day I get a message saying, thank you so much for this book because you've really helped me. And, I was really struggling, and it's such a good story. And when it was World Book Day earlier this year, I couldn't believe the amount of messages I was getting of little ones dressing up as May, the main character from my book. I was so overwhelmed. So now I've got to think about another story that I feel equally as, because I'm only writing another one if I feel as passionate about it, because I'm not here to become Roald Dahl, you know. It just sort of happened, and there was a real sort of place for it, and it wasn't you know, there's a real gap in the market for what I was trying to do. So yeah, it started as sort of a self-indulgent thing, but I suppose everything does, doesn't it?
Mm. And also it's wanting to be heard as well, isn't it? It's,
yeah.
It's believing in something and feeling so passionate about it that you thought, this needs to be out there.
And also the stats when I stumbled across this piece that I think The Guardian ran when I was writing the book about, you know, how little bang characters there are in children's publishing.
Mm.
And the lack of diversity. And I think it was something like, I think in across schools, I think almost 40% of young children in school are of a BAME background, and 1% of children's publishing featured a lead BAME character. It's crazy. Like, it's so, honestly, it's like the Dark Ages again. And I think then even 0.0, whatever it was a female BAME character. Mm.
Gosh,
I know. It's honestly crazy to even think that's a thing, to be honest. You know, we're in 2019. It's unbelievable. But in children's publishing, it really, really is behind. Mm. So then obviously that gave me even more of a drive. So I think just, you know, how we need to, you can't encourage children to read and write if you're not sort of, you know, they can only be what they can see, you know. And I think that if you want to catch their attention, every child should be able to recognise themselves in a book.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that. It's not really up for discussion. That's fact.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's my aim. So that's sort of then become my aim for book two, just to, you know, and not just race from a disability point of view, from a mm-hmm. sexuality point of view. I think, you know, children should be able to sort of express themselves in that.
It is that thing of being able to look to the media, whatever that media might be. And see yourself reflected back.
Well, I think it resonates with you, doesn't it? Mm. And that happens at such a young age. You can see that. And, you know, the messages that I get from little ones, they're so excited because they think that is them in the book, you know, which is crazy. But, you know, yourself, you follow people on Instagram that you think, oh, I quite like doing what they're doing or whatever it might be, because, you know, you can recognise yourself, or you can recognise your passion, or you can, you know, you relate to it.
Mm.
So you can't expect children to sort of be engaged if they can't see themselves.
No, very, very true. Well, I'm very intrigued to see what the next one will
be. Me too. If you've got any ideas, send them my way.
But it is that thing about it has to be true to you. And that seems to be another core of whatever the work might be, whether it's writing your book, whether it's TV presenting, like you don't align yourself with something that is incongruous.
And I think I've been younger and I've been through that stage and where maybe I've endorsed something that I wasn't really sure about. But now it's very much like, well, since the past, I suppose, 5 years or so, like, you just get to a stage where you know yourself more than anybody else.
Mm.
And I think before that, comes back to what I was saying earlier, you kind of take everyone else's opinion on who you are. Rather than just going, actually, no, this is what I believe in. And I think for me, it's really just when it comes to working with a brand or when it comes to hosting something, that anyone that I partner with or anyone that I'm aligned with, I make sure that it's totally me and it's exactly what I'm proud of.
Mm.
And I can talk about it confidently because it, you know, I'm passionate about it. Yeah.
Well, we are talking about the big hair spot. Let's talk about hair.
Yes.
Because you are an ambassador for John Frieda.
Yeah, I am. Which is kind of like one of those surreal moments, because John Frieda Frizzies was the first product that I ever owned. It's kind of the only product on the market, to be honest with you, when I was young and my hair was curly. And then fast forward when I started blow drying my hair, the serum is what I would use on my hair for blow drying. And it's kind of one of those when my agent called me and was like, so John Frieda, you know, maybe we might work together. How do you feel about that? I was like, what? So yeah, it's kind of one of those real weird kind of like full circle things where you're like, well, it's actually crazy that it's kind of got to that point, which is, you know, amazing. And it's great for my kids to see. And I think that, yeah, it was a really like, oh my goodness, I can't believe they want me to do that sort of phone call to receive, in a bit of a pinch me moment, but so happy to be working with them.
I remember back in my early days of beauty journalism, frizzies doesn't suit my hair. My hair is just very fine and flat. But when I first started writing beauty and you'd ask people what their holy grail products were. Like I used to do a page, it'd be like, what's in your makeup bag?
Yeah.
And people would say frizzies.
Yeah, like a little cult product, isn't it? A hero product.
Because it really was so ahead of its time in terms
of... So ahead. Yeah. Well, now that you can get a bunch of serums, but at that point, no one was doing serums. Mm. They were the, as you say, the holy grail. Yeah, it's just kind of nice to be working with a brand that you feel so passionate about. And there's a product of theirs that is the Dream Curl Cream. And that's kind of like my hero product. That's my, like, I use it every day. I can't live without it product.
Really?
Every day.
There are, is it the product that if you were told, Rochelle, pack your bags, but we're going away for the night, you'd be like, fine, but yeah, I do fine. Need that.
Yeah. And I think even my hubby would know. If I had to say, like, pack a toiletry bag for me in a rush, he'd know.
Oh.
Yeah.
That is interesting. And I guess as well, like, natural hair and the movement towards, as we've talked about, inclusivity and seeing yourself stare back, it's really, really important, right?
Totally. I think that even crazy things of like, someone said to me the other day, I love that what you're doing with all this hair stuff. And I don't really feel like I'm doing anything with hair apart from just wearing my natural hair, you know? And yeah, someone said to me, I love just, it's so refreshing to see a curly haired woman on television, which is crazy to even think that. But I suppose you get used to, I don't know, there's something that comes with having curly hair that sometimes you feel less professional. Or I kind of did like, I did this whole item on it for this morning. And I went and interviewed like lots of different people and women. And I interviewed the beauty editor for Cosmopolitan magazine.
Inga.
And yes, that's right. Yeah, she was fab. She was really fab.
I love her.
And they did like a survey. And I think they were saying that women feel less professional. And I think women may be going into a big board meeting and all everyone does is say, oh my God, your hair's amazing. Can I touch your hair? Because it's curly and it's different. They feel like they just don't want to be noticed. And I think you associate having big curly hair with someone that's bubbly and someone that's really, you know, outgoing. And sometimes people just don't want to stand out. So that was funny. There was just loads of different comments from different people. And it was quite funny to hear, you know, everyone's sort of different journey behind it. But that seemed to be a lot of it, that I just want to blend in. I don't really want people to just sort of comment on it. I just want to, you know, get stuck into my work.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
See, I'm a straight haired girl who has just been trying to curl it for years. And now it's the technology's there. So I can. I haven't today.
It's always the way, though. The grass is always greener, apparently.
Did you spend a lot of time trying to straighten your hair trying to...
I chemically relaxed it. I've done everything to my hair, you know, prior to now. But, you know, I think it's just part of growing up. And what's natural to you, you'll find will always look the best on you.
Yeah.
Which is funny, isn't it? You think, you know, oh, I'm going to spend my years doing this and straightening my hair. And now I actually had my hair blow dried at the weekend. And I went out with my brothers and sisters and they were like, oh, I don't like your hair. It's funny, isn't it? And they're all sat there with straight hair. I'm like, really? Like, this is how I used to be all the time. They're like, oh, it just doesn't suit you. I'm like, I was rocking this hair for years and no one felt to tell me that it doesn't suit me. But I think you just get used to, don't you? You get used to a person, I think. You know, especially now my kids, they see me with curly hair and that's it.
Yeah. And it's acceptance as well. It's like a bigger picture, isn't it? Of like accepting whether it's your body type or your body shape or whatever it might be.
And as soon as you're comfortable with anything, everyone else is comfortable with it. That's what you need to remember. Like, as soon as you're like, this is the way I'm happy and I'm going to own it. And you walk around with confidence in that bikini or you know, whatever it might be. People are like, feel sort of confident. Because you are. It's weird. You can kind of sort of spread that vibe, I think.
And I think that's really interesting coming from you because, listeners, when you work in TV, there'll be a call sheet. And Rochelle, your name is probably a lot of the time at the top of the call sheet. And in my experience of working on shoots or TV, it's the person whose name is at the top of the call sheet that sets the tone.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting for the whole day, for the whole crew.
Oh, do you think so? That's interesting
to know that. Yeah. So I think it's very interesting that you say that if I'm confident, then everyone else will be confident because that's what I'm projecting. Yeah. I wonder if you bring that to your work.
Probably. Maybe without knowing. Yeah, I just think if you believe in yourself, I think whatever it might be, if you're, you know, if I was trying to tell you something that I probably wasn't that confident about, but I could really deliver it in a way that I felt it, and you would feel safe in knowing what I've said, is valid, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I just think if you're confident, I think that shines.
Yeah.
Even like you look at things like, I mean, forgive me because I'm spending most of my evenings, but watching Love Island.
I'm with you, Rochelle.
It's very sad. I mean, I hate to admit it, but it's just so good. I can't not watch it. But even like when Maura came in and she was so confident, but that almost, that is what, I mean, sometimes she overdid it a bit, first of all, I will say. But I think that is, and I think that's what men.
Mm.
I think a confident woman's really like, sometimes it can really sort of intimidate them, or just they just find it really sexy just because you're like, you're secure in yourself. You don't need reassuring. And we all do sometimes, but I think that's really appealing.
I have a WhatsApp group for Love Island. And when Amy...
you took it there.
I've got several. When Amy asked Curtis for constructive criticism...
Oh my gosh. I was so upset with that. I was literally so frustrated. It was just like, oh... And bless her, like she was saying this is her first relationship and she's doing it on telly, which is just killer. But I'm like, where were the girls? Did no one tell her this was like, you know, she's almost giving someone a manual of how not to play it.
This,
you know, it's like, you don't do this, you don't do, because it's just like, she just had no game with it. And I felt devastated for her because she's clearly heartbroken over the whole thing. But I'm like, oh gosh, I just need to be in there and just give you a pep talk and say, just stop talking to him for a bit. Give him space. Go away. Be confident. You know, do your own thing. Enjoy yourself in there. And trust me, he'll be straight over to you in a day. Like, she could have played it so differently.
And realise that his opinion
doesn't
make you better or worse.
No. Oh.
Listeners, this is somebody who got rejected in a love reality show and then asked the rejecter for constructive feedback on what she could have done differently.
It was just a terror. And
but it's so me.
And
that's
he also wasn't constructive either. He just sort of told her that he couldn't see himself marrying her, having children with her.
The thing he said to her, which broke my heart and made me realise Amy was me previously in like my 20s, was when he said, you do need a lot of reassurance, which is why I mentioned it, because... you talk about if you're confident, if you're in the room and you're going, yeah, no, everything's fine, and maybe you're faking it till you're making it, but you're still sort of projecting.
But sometimes
that.
You know, you fake it till you make it, you believe that yourself after a while, and then you feel better. I think that, you know, everyone, don't get me wrong, everyone needs reassurance. I think it's just knowing where to get that from and in what environment that it's okay to, you know. I think, yeah, you know, it's knowing who you can trust for that reassurance.
Yeah.
But it's not the guy that you're dating.
But it's a good example of the confidence, and like, actually, would you say you can reassure yourself? Like, do you have a self-soothing mechanism? If, say, you have...
Yeah, I can now.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's more just like, come on, Michelle, you've been in tough situations in this, just get a grip, you can do it. Like these mental sort of arguments I have with myself sometimes. Or just, you know, you've got two children... What would they think right now if you was worrying about this? And I sort of just tell myself that a little bit.
That's really interesting. Nice.
It doesn't mean I get nervous, because I do.
Yeah.
But I just think you should always do something that makes you feel a bit nervous.
Oh, is fear where the real stuff happens?
Yeah, I think so. Because then you can look back and go, oh my goodness, I was so nervous, but I'm so happy with myself that I did that. And sort of give yourself your own little pat on the back.
Yeah, little markers.
Yeah, I think so.
I remember working on live TV and someone saying to me after a little while, do you still get nervous just before you go on? And I said, oh God, yeah. And she said, the day I worry is when people say they're not nervous anymore.
Exactly that. Like, I think I definitely still get nervous. I think if you don't, then maybe the passion for it's gone a bit.
Is it partly because you're sort of thinking, if something does go wrong, I wonder what I'll do?
Yeah, I really like this job. I want to carry on doing this. Let's not mess it up too much, you know. Yeah, you definitely. I mean, you'd be lying if you didn't. I mean, different levels of nerves. Not like, oh my God, I'm going to throw up. I'm so nervous for this. But just like, that little sort of adrenaline buzz.
But every now and again, do you think it's good to, metaphorically speaking, do a parachute jump? And throw yourself into that thing
I'm not sure how I feel, but yes, exactly that. Do the parachute jump. I'm not sure if I'm going to jump out of a plane.
Or just the big thing, whether it's telling someone that you fancied for ages that you fancy them, or doing something.
Definitely. That's so healthy. And you're only here once.
Mm.
You know? So just, why not? What if? What is the worst that can happen? That's what I always tell myself.
Mm.
In this situation, what is the worst that can happen? And if it's a bad thing or the news that you don't want to live, that you don't want to be with someone anymore, whatever it might be, is a weight going to be lifted from my shoulders? Am I going to feel better after knowing I'm not in this situation? Or, you know, whatever it might be, it always ends up for the better, I think.
I agree. You're lovely to hang out with.
Oh, God, I don't know about that.
What a beam of sunshine. Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed that.
Thank you. It was very nice. Very nice chat.
Obviously, listeners, all of the links to everything that we have discussed will be in the show notes. But for now, Rochelle, thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Before you go, I just wanted to say a huge thank you for taking the time to listen to that episode. I really hope you enjoyed the conversation with Rochelle and I. If you want to get in touch with me, please do email me at thebeautypodcast@gmail.com or slide into my DMs on Twitter and Instagram, where I am at Emma Guns. And if you feel so inclined and want to chat to me and thousands of other listeners to the podcast, then why not join the closed Facebook group? All you have to do is click the link in the show notes, which can be found wherever it is that you are streaming and downloading this episode. Thank you once again for your time. I really do appreciate it. And I cannot wait to see you on the next one.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.